This podcast is brought to you by Mate, high-speed internet with Aussie customer service.
You're listening to At Home with FNR.
And now, I can announce the host country of the FIFA Women's World Cup 2023, which will be Australia. Yeah!
Well, guys, what a day it has been. Welcome to At Home with FNR. It has been one of the most incredible few hours in football, not only here in Australia, but all around the world. It almost doesn't give justice just for this 1 hour to dedicate to just one thing. There is so many things happening. You feel like you need almost 3 hours to cover all that has happened in just little under 12 hours. First of all, we've got a World Cup coming to Australia in 3 years' time. But second of all, as you can see, Liverpool have finally won the English Premier League title. They are champions of 2020.
What does that word say? What does it say? Say it out loud, Nick. Say it. What does the word say?
Premier League champions.
Champions. Oh, yeah.
Campioni. Oh, yeah. How do you guys feel this morning? I'll let you guys have your forum. How was it? How do you feel right now?
Ecstatic. Exhilarated, over the moon, take your pick. Seriously, it's very special. Obviously, in our lifetime, we've never seen it as Reds fans, and I can't even imagine the diehard Reds that have been around for all those years and seen so many nearlies and close misses and infamous slip ups, That's all done now. We've finally got our hands on the trophy, and like you said, it only made for just an extra special morning after the original fantastic news that we received early on.
Well, for me, I think it's almost an interesting mix of emotions. Obviously, there's the joy and relief that finally made it over the line. But obviously, we all knew this was coming and we all knew that it was going to happen eventually. So it's almost just like we can all just calm down, we can all relax, and we can maybe take our minds off, you know, everything that's going on and forget about, you know, the impending unofficial asterisks that will be placed on this season by fans from across the Premier League. So for me, I think it's more just we can all just take a deep breath and just accept the fact that this is now a thing. We are champions. And now, for the rest of the season, I'm interested to see what direction we're going to go in. Are we going to go for the 107 points?
Well, it's an interesting one. It's a very interesting one. And look, as you guys are all decked out in your Liverpool gear, I think we should talk a little bit about Liverpool and probably go a bit more in depth a little bit later, because obviously we are from Australia.
Good.
And it does. Look, I'm going to give you guys the forum a little bit later in the show.
There's bigger news.
At the end of the day, there is something a bit bigger than Liverpool winning the championship. I'm really sorry, but Australia had their moment. And this is almost like the 2009 Grammys or the VMAs. Everyone's like, Kanye West came up on the stage and said, yeah, you won the league. But you know, you have to vote. Beyonce did it better. So what I'm trying to say is that basically, how cool is it that in 3 years' time, it has been confirmed after one of the most anxious 24 hours, I think, for all football fans around Australia and also in New Zealand about whether we will be hosting a World Cup or not. But the Women's World Cup has finally landed in Australia. Colombia came up with this incredible, well, I wouldn't call it an incredible bid, but they had that last...
They were there.
Of your wafer, and they almost pinched it. There was that anxiety, and you're thinking, oh no, is it 2010 all over again?
Like, yeah.
It's too good to be true. Everything is going in our favor, but something is not going to go right. And it went right to that last second when Gianni Infantino said country.
Country.
Oh, and not countries. And it was like, are you kidding me? Are they trying to troll every single Australian fan everywhere at the moment with this? And finally got announced, and the scenes inside the FFA headquarters were unbelievable. The Matildas players, Alana Kennedy and co, and some of New Zealand players were all going, it's absolutely ecstatic. Chris Snicker, James Johnson, the rest of the contingency, it was great. And we have finally got a World Cup here. It is amazing. I'm so excited for this.
I mean, I think watching the stream at, you know, 1:45 this morning when it was scheduled to start at 1 o'clock, there was complete silence across the YouTube stream, and then some weird jazz music came on and we all felt a little bit uncomfortable for about 20 minutes. But then he showed his face and he gave a nice little introduction. And then, as you said, he said country. But it makes sense for the World Cup to be in Australia and New Zealand. Let's all be honest. I had a horrible feeling going into the announcement that we wouldn't get it. I think maybe it was pessimism on my part. But honestly, going back, it almost brought back memories of, as you said, 2010, 2006, when, you know, you're a kid, you're watching the Socceroos, and it's the most important thing in your life is the Socceroos and the national team success. Honestly, it's a dream come true to have a World Cup. And with the way that women's football has taken over or maybe captured the emotion of both the Australian footballing audience, but also the global footballing audience, it couldn't be better timing. And it's a chance for us to show off how we are as a footballing nation, how we are as a progressive nation, and maybe find some success on the pitch. Because I think if I were a Matilda, there would be nothing that would get me up and about more than, I was about to say, a packed out MCG, but we know that's not going to be the case. But maybe a packed out Olympic Park or Stadium Australia or something like that. So I'm so, so excited. And the best thing about it, it's only 3 years away. It's not like we're in 2010 and the 2022 World Cup is being announced. It's not even that far away.
Yeah, it's a massive moment for Australia, for Asian football, I think we had our show a couple of weeks ago and dissected it and spoke of really how huge it can be, hopefully it can be for the development of the game in this country. And I think it's been a long time coming. I think the 2007 Women's World Cup, I believe, was in China. Other than that, 2002 men's was South Korea, Japan. You know, Africa had their moment in 2010. But aside from that, I mean, Germany had the men's in 06 and then the women's again 5 years later in 2011.
Yeah.
So Europe, as they should, you know, we call it European football. It is really the European game. You know, they've dominated that sort of stuff. We've seen obviously Brazil in 2014, etc. But it's a long time coming for a major world football tournament to come back to Asia. And even, well, obviously Oceania is tricky business, but away from mainland Asia, like you said, I think it was the only decision really, if we're going to call it a world game, and it's the touch all corners of the world, and this is the perfect opportunity for that.
What I reckon the best part about this that you mentioned is that we can win a World Cup on our own soil. And how rare is it that a team actually wins a world tournament on their home soil? We saw, obviously, there have been times where it's happened, but this could be huge. And as you said, not just for women's football, but for women's sport here in Australia, because women's sport here in Australia is taking off at a level that has never been seen before. You know, we saw at the start of this year with the Cricket World Cup how big that was with Australia winning at the MCG and breaking all sorts of records. We've seen the rise of AFLW, but the Matildas, along with that, have probably been the best. They have been the pioneers of football in this country because they've been that damn good. So I think if they were actually able to win a World Cup when they do reach their peak, as Ivan's actually come through in the comments and said that at that point in time, they will be at their peak. That is what the most exciting thing is. They have a lot of great young talent coming through. Some of their more experienced heads will still be going around by that stage. And the thing is, it will capture the imagination of football in this country, something that we have not seen in such a long time. Like, we had the tease of 2015 at the Asian Cup, and they didn't capitalize on it enough. Like, there was that great atmosphere of Australia winning the Asian Cup, but this goes to another level. Instead of having millions of eyes, there's going to be billions of eyes on this. It's a huge tournament that will be massive for the economy post-COVID. That's one thing we've got to remember as well. It's going to be a massive shot in the arm of the economy in Australia and New Zealand when you look at it from a financial point of view. But it's a great chance for women's football to continue to develop in the way that it already is starting to, and Australia to be taken a lot more seriously. This is exactly what this sport needs. It has come at probably the time where football, this country, is heading towards rock bottom again. And now there's the light at the end of the tunnel. There's the thing that's coming in 3 years' time. Like, there's doubt about the A-League, there's doubt about the W-League and everything else. But now we're starting to see the ball and the boulder turning, and the wheels are getting in motion. Everything's starting to come around. And look, let's be real. We've got the infrastructure, not just here in Australia, but in New Zealand, to host
absolutely
damn good tournament. Like, we have got some brilliant stadia that I can't wait to see when it gets jazzed up a little bit more for 3 years' time.
I think we'll talk about this from maybe a sporting perspective that we can all 100% understand. This is our number one draft pick. We have tanked for 6 or 7 years, and this is our Zion Williamson.
Yeah,
this is what will get us back on track. But look, it has to be
AFL heads. This is our Matt Rowe, but you know, we'll keep it. We'll try and give people both sides a point here.
Absolutely. I mean, we have to. I think it's important that we have to acknowledge the fact that we've put such a good bid together as well, and also in collaboration with New Zealand, who I think if I'm FIFA and I'm considering this bid, I think they're hugely important as well. Because if you're going to Oceania, you can't ignore New Zealand. If I was a Kiwi and they only went to Australia, I'd be spewing. So I think we have to acknowledge the fact that they're going to be hugely important in this as well. And it's going to be huge for, you know, New Zealand women's football as well. Because how often do we talk about them? It's pretty rare that, you know, the New Zealand women's team kind of gets a shout and gets talked about. So who knows where they'll be when this comes around. And you talk about the implication for football as a whole. And you talked about the fact that this is going to have a huge impact on, you know, the W League, but also the A League. Is with this guaranteed shot in the arm, as you said, Nick, how are we going to look towards 2023 as a season for the W League and the A League? What's going to change? Are we going to bring in a new team into New Zealand? If we're going to have all these games played at Eden Park, like we've seen a couple of games this year played at Eden Park, will we see more football there? Are we going to see a team down in Tasmania now that there's going to be games hosted there? Is that going to be what's going to kind of take control of the country in terms of what our eyes are focused on? This is going to be a month and a half of only football that people are going to care about.
Just a really quick one before I get to you, Nick, about that. What you said, maybe Wellington have a W League team by then. Maybe that's
they have to.
By that stage, they have to.
Without a doubt.
Because they're going to be playing a game in Tassie, in Launceston, you'd think that this gives Tasmania their chance to maybe, if it's just a W League team at the start and then build towards an A League team, if they don't have a team by then, it at least gets the ball moving in that aspect. I reckon it's going to be great because it will get us talking a lot more, and, you know, with more interest, there'll be more, I guess, desire to see more teams. And finally, and hopefully by that stage, we have a second tier. Hopefully we have an established pyramid, and we can start to see something moving, or at least a plan to, around that point in time. Another one as well is, if the A-League still in and W-League are playing in winter by then, if they keep this same structure, it will collide. So I'm actually really curious how the W-League, whether they look to maybe move the league a little bit around in terms of logistics. How does it clash with that? Do they stick to a summer league concept? I reckon there's a lot of different things to weigh up.
Yeah, I think you both sort of hit the nail on the head. There's so many things, and it's all exciting things. For once, we're not thinking about so many what-ifs that could go wrong. All these what-ifs are just excitement and pure joy for the game. It's funny, whenever we talk about expansion for the A-League, we never really talk about another team coming to New Zealand. It's always been, you know, Geelong and MacArthur and Team 11, whoever else that have had their bids. But I reckon another one, two, maybe even three teams in New Zealand, obviously long-term, by, you know, give sort of 10, 15 years. If we're wanting to go towards a like a 20-team first division and then second, third divisions, etc., by that time, I think we definitely have to expand into New Zealand because, look, the Phoenix have had their struggles, but I think there are a lot of people's, I don't know, sort of side interest, if you like. It's probably not the best term.
They're everyone's second team.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone sort of loves the Knicks, and they've had some great players, some great coaches, and some fantastic seasons. And like you said, they've got the infrastructure. New Zealand is such a great sporting country, just like we are as well. Obviously, the All Blacks are probably one of, if not the greatest sporting team going around. You know, they're great at cricket, basketball, etc. And expanding W League into New Zealand would be terrific as well. And for the Matildas, like you said, obviously we had that that unreal 2015 Asian Cup campaign where we won as the host, and you know, eight years later now, with the Matildas coming into 2023, they have to go in as one of the tournament favourites, certainly. Get 3 years down the track, to think the likes of Kerr, Razo, Carpenter, etc. are all going to be 3 years older. And if the trend continues that all our star players are going to play in Europe, obviously Sam Kerr joined Chelsea, Caitlin Ford was at Arsenal, Hayley Razo was at Everton. Very unfortunate that the FA Women's Super League wasn't able to continue during this period. But if we get more of that, and the beauty of women's football is so many players can effectively play two seasons. Like we've seen Sam Kerr, among others, sort of go to America and come back to play in the A-League as well. So you can only think three more years of football and of development, encouragement, support, and everything from all the governing bodies to put into the Matildas, and by that time, if we've got expansion and second division and a new broadcast deal and everything, this could really be a massive point. And I think 2015 was like we're at the top of the roller coaster, and then after that we just zoomed down. We've gone a bit. We've had a few little loop de loops. We've had some ups and downs, but now approaching 2023, we're coming right back up to the summit.
Well, I think you're going, Ed.
I was just going to say that. Usually we're looking at these kind of things, and you touched on it, Nick Hughes, about, you know, what ifs. And we're always talking about, oh, what if this happened? What if that happened? Mm-hmm. I think one of the big things we have to think about is this isn't a situation like if we got, say, the success we had in the 2006 World Cup. It's not a situation where, oh, we got to the World Cup and now people are finally going to be interested in football. People could not be more interested in the Matildas, I think. If you're a footballing fan and you don't love the Matildas, I don't know who you are. They are probably the most likable team in Australia across any code. Everyone loves the Matildas.
No, I agree.
So this will, I can't even imagine the boost that this will give just football as a whole to drive it over the level of what we can even comprehend. This isn't a situation where, you know, oh, finally eyes are going to be on football. Eyes are already on the Matildas. Eyes are already on football. Who knows where it can go? This is a situation we've never seen a situation like this before. This will reach heights that I don't think anyone has ever seen in Australia before.
This is the biggest event that Australia has held since the 2000 Olympics. This is what we're going to remember.
Yeah.
This is the biggest event. Like, and you'd think now how things have changed since the year 2000 in terms of technology and having more access to see more events at once. I don't know what it was like in 2000, I was 2 years old, but you can only assume now with, you know, all this different stuff here, you can watch multiple games at once, having, you know, streaming deals here, that, broadcasting that, and the access to so many different platforms. I honestly think this is going to be massive. Like, being in these cities when there's a World Cup on, like, you know, I speak to people who went to Russia 2 years ago and they say it was the most incredible experience of their life. We don't have to go anywhere. We can walk down the street. We it's literally just backyard. Get up and just drive into the city, and it's going to be a hub. It's going to be amazing. Like, even if the Matildas, for us here in Melbourne, the Matildas make the final. It's in Sydney. you know, you pack out Fed Square, you get people down to Birrarung Mud, you take advantage of that. This is the one thing that, you know, I want to see done, is I want to see people really getting behind them to a greater extent to what they already were. Because, you know, this morning, you know, I'm not going to lie, I fell asleep with Twitter open about 2 minutes before.
Totally acceptable.
Heard the jazz music and I fell asleep. Like, I just went, hey, I was out. But when I was looking through social media this morning, when I woke up again at around 3 a.m. and I woke up, my phone's still bright in my face. Yeah. You know, I saw the buzz. All this buzz. People want to see football do well. So where has this been for so long with the A-League and W-League? Got to manifest that now in the next 3 years and try and build and build and build the excitement. And in 2023, it's going to be this huge explosion of just like, oh my goodness. Like, it's going to be amazing.
I've always missed what it means to follow Australian sport. Like, I feel like the last time I was truly and emotionally invested in an Australian sport, you know, was almost back in like 2010, 2006.
Yeah.
You know, the 2014 World Cup, it was fine. You know, 2018, it was, you know, I was invested, but it kind of didn't bring that childlike enthusiasm that obviously it had in the past. That feels like it's coming back. Like it, you know, you think about going to Fed Square, you think about going to all these places to watch the games. That will probably be the epitome of what it is to be a football fan in Australia. And I think we do it differently to how other people do it. I think Australians care about Australians playing sport because I feel like it's everyone's dream. I'm sure you guys can agree. It was your dream as a kid to grow up and be a footballer or a cricketer or a basketballer. I was exactly the same. So for these kids now growing up, if you're, you know, a 10-year-old kid and your dad's just told you like, oh, hey, there's going to be a World Cup in Australia in 3 years. Or even if you're a 15-year-old and you're learning that there's going to be a World Cup in 3 years, you're going to still be invested in football. You're going to be invested in women's football and you're going to continue to have interest in it. So for the next 3 years, if we can capitalize on this interest and really build something phenomenal, then I think this will change the way that we look at football and the way that football is played and the way that football is watched in this country forever, without a doubt.
Massively. And on that as well, obviously the like talk about participation and interest and whatever from a fan point of view and from the public, I'm thinking now with everything that's going on with regards to broadcast deals and everything, I'm thinking the massive media opportunity that's going to come from this. Big media organizations are going to be wanting to show these games for starters in Australia. We're going to get all kinds of British, French, Brazilian, whoever media coming over. It's going to be huge. I think it's something like an Oz Open, or the F1. Which are two of the biggest events in sport in this country, and might I add, they're both in Melbourne. So, wink, wink, Sydney. But I think of that's what Oz Open's 2 weeks. This is going to be a month, twice as long. And the opportunity for journos here, for journos worldwide, and that can only just continue to promote this interest and get more people on board, get it touched on in the mainstream, we spoke, Josh Lockie and I last week about things like free-to-air and streaming, et cetera. But I think that's going to be a really, really key point from this is the media and the exposure we're going to get and the just people coming from all over the globe to participate in this.
One really small one before we go to a break, guys, because our Zoom call is about to end. Just a quick one. I think the one thing that's so exciting about all this is that you say like the Australian Open, but we're just used to the Australian Open being in Melbourne. So the excitement's there, exactly. But it's not. It's just like it's there. You know what I mean?
It's run of the mill.
It's like the grand final. It's like the Melbourne Cup. It's like the Grand Prix. This is going to be so different. It's going to be like that on steroids. You know, we get excited when like Ash Barty or Nick Kyrgios has a run. Well, not everyone about Nick Kyrgios is like, sorry. Like when Ash Barty had that, won the French Open last year. That was huge. That was massive. You know, we haven't seen a basketball team really contend for a very long time. It's exciting, that sport, because that basketball team's going to improve.
Yeah. The Boomers.
You've got the hockey team always dominates the Olympics. But all this stuff, like the Socceroos and everything, we've never really manifested it in a way that I felt in that same 2006 match, as you said, Ed. Yeah. But we haven't gotten people together to really congregate and watch these events in and be part of something, even if they're playing on the other side of the world. They played France in the 2018 World Cup at 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time. Did they have an event at Federation Square? No. Doesn't matter if it's winter or not. People are going to go. You have to manifest this. Stop. Like, you got to stop, you know, putting the barriers up and just let it happen. People want to be able to go to this instead of standing in a bar where it's, you know, you're crammed in. It's very hot inside. You want to have that opportunity being part of it. Like, you've seen the scenes of the Uruguay game at Fed Square. Like, it was nuts. You want to see more of that. You want to see people getting around it.
You're listening to At Home with FNR.
Welcome back to At Home with FNR. I'm not going to say any more because I got cut off mid-sentence.
But basically,
I think we've said enough about the Women's World Cup and everything else and the excitement. If you did miss it this morning, Australia and New Zealand have been awarded the hosting rights of the 2023 Women's World Cup. But that's not the only exciting news. If you're an Australian or a New Zealander and you're a Liverpool supporter, today is the best day of your life. Like, you could have been married, you could have had your firstborn, you could have had anything else happen, you could have had a promotion at work, but today is a day to be proud because Liverpool have finally won a Premier League title. I know they won first division titles, finally won a Premier League title. So very similar to like our good friends Port Adelaide about how they celebrate Sandford flags. We won't go down that path. But basically, this morning, Chelsea's win over Man City, a 2-1 win at Stamford Bridge, saw Liverpool clinch their first English Premier League title, their first division title in how long, Nick Hughes?
30 long, hard years, Nick the
Banner. Wow.
30 years.
Wow. After long all time. That, finally.
I know you've you took the words out of my mouth a little bit there. I was wondering after the game. I was thinking, gee, you know, people say your wedding day is the best day of your life, or your the birth of your firstborn child's the best day of your life. And I'm thinking, Jesus, those days must be pretty bloody good to top this.
They've set the standard pretty high. I mean, I think it almost feels like, for me, it just feels like it just is a thing that we knew was coming.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of when it peaked during this season. And I think we've just been so good. No. And the rest of, let's call it our competition, our competition has just been so bad. Arsenal are mid-table, guys. Tottenham are mid-table. There's no one even close to competing with us. And I think if we're looking past what just this title means, if Liverpool can sign, I was going to say one £50 million player, but we know their budget is below that. If they can sign, you know, a couple little reinforcements and compete next year and do well next year, this can be a complete dynasty.
Oh,
a dynasty, because
you're talking like the big three in 2011. It's not going to be one, it's not going to be two, it's not going to be three.
I'm serious. Jürgen Klopp said when he took over, somebody was like, oh, what are your expectations for, you know, going forward? When do you expect to compete for a title? And he said, oh, maybe 4 or 5 years we would compete for title. He wasn't wrong, guys. He was correct. If you're predicting that, if you're predicting the fact you're going to be competing for a title, like, he had the plan in place. Mm. He knew what he wanted. He brought in the men that he wanted. So this could be one of the most dominant teams in the Premier League era. What's stopping Liverpool from going on a Manchester United run and, you know, winning a few in a row? Let's think big picture here, Nick Hughes. Let's go for a three-peat.
Exactly. I think the next few years are going to be massive in English football because, like you said, Ed, no one has come close. Like Man City are clearly a phenomenal team. But we talk about Arsenal. Man City have lost 8 games. How many games have Arsenal lost?
7?
Double digits,
eight,
maybe?
8. Oh, they've lost the same amount of games as Arsenal.
Wow.
And we're talking about Arsenal being in turmoil. Now, look, obviously, there's however big the gap is, that's probably 20-some points. And
lost count.
But the fact that, and just the other day, Klopp said it as well, after the Burnley game, he said, I won't try the German accent as impeccable as you, Ed. But he said, watching that Man City game, I was thinking, how on earth is any team 20 points clear of this Man City side, of how good they were, because they just cut Burnley to shreds. But that's, on one hand, he has a point, but on the other hand, it's because this Liverpool team is just unreal.
Yeah.
The season has been, nothing short of incredible. And looking at the next few years, you're exactly right. Like right now, and we probably thought this about Man City when they got when they had their 100-point season as well, that they maybe they're going to go and have a dynasty. But honestly, right now in this moment, I don't think anyone can realistically say that Liverpool aren't going to win another title for the next 5 years or so. For real, the next 4 or 5 years, Liverpool could win all or maybe all but one title.
If we're looking back,
United and Chelsea still have a few years to come back. Spurs and Arsenal are out of the question.
Who even knows what they are?
Exactly.
If we're looking back on this team, I'll compare it to 2013, where, you know, when it's the saying of like, I wish somebody told us when we were in the golden days. This is it. We have the best left back in the world, the best center back in the world, the best right back in the world, the best goalkeeper in the world. We have the best front three in the world. When was the last time this happened in any team ever?
Exactly. Okay?
I look back at 2013 and I almost think the same thing. We had young Raheem Sterling. We had Dominic Coutinho. We still had Steven Gerrard. We had Luis Suarez. So we had those players, but you don't realize how good it is. We need to realize how good this is. This doesn't happen every day of the week. This happens once in a lifetime that you sign the best left back in the world for £8 million or whatever it was. You have Trent Alexander-Arnold come through the academy. You have Mane, Salah and Firmino all come in for like £30 million. This is the way that football clubs should be run. And I think Liverpool, honestly, will be the model going forward. They will set the precedent for what a good football club is. Mm.
You know what, Ed? I reckon this Liverpool team is a level above the Milan golden generation of Pirlo, Kaká. What do you reckon, Ed?
Oh, I mean, you guys need to get off your bloody high horse already. I'd like to sit and listen to you two.
This is me right now.
Get that fishing rod out, Nick. Reel that fish in. Reel him in.
No. All right, get off your high horse already. You won the
champion, a Champions League, final, and a Premier League. What more can you ask for, honestly?
Win some more, mate. Win some more Champions League. Yeah,
we've won 6, mate.
Delusion overload here, and you wonder why opposition fans don't like it.
We're allowed to be deluded.
Look, I'm not taking anything away from Liverpool. They had a fantastic season. They've been fantastic.
Fantastic 3 years.
Yes, you've been great. You've been great. But what goes up must come down eventually. And what I'm saying is, we have said, you know, like, I reckon Liverpool going to win another championship next 5 years. Don't get me wrong.
Mm.
But there's always a new contender. Now, what I'm saying is that I don't think a new contender is going to be Manchester United or Man City or us.
I think
your new contender is coming, Chelsea. The team who has handed you the title on a silver platter this morning in the form of Chelsea, based off the signings they've made, their young core, and maybe as soon as the next couple of years, who knows, maybe they'll be there. And look, kudos Liverpool. That team, if they did not win a title, that would be one of the great travesties of the modern era of football ever, that team did not win a league, because they were that damn good this season. And winning the Champions League last year and not winning it the year before and everything else, it was bound to happen, right? It was bound to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to happen anyway. Yeah, how did you win the time? Bro.
I'm not done.
Okay, go on.
I'm just telling you. But to say that Liverpool are better than the golden age AC Milan. Come on, man.
Let's look at a period of what that team was. That was old man football time. Andrea Pirlo, he looks like he's 55. He's just come off a nice Metro Cafe at Nikos. He's just jumped on the pitch. Clarence Seedorf, he's an old man. The defense is filled with gangland. You know, mafia bosses who are just running around stomping on people. This Liverpool side, Nick DiBarno, this changed the game of football. It has proved that the gegenpress can dominate the game. You know, Pep Guardiola's little tiki-taka had its time. It's failed. Whatever everyone else is playing, failed. Arsenal deliberately playing bad football and hoping to win games, clearly failed. The gegenpress will dominate the game for the next 10 years. Baby Jurgen Klopp will be spawned somewhere. Who knows where he is now? He will come.
Can I just ask just two things? Ed, first of all, if you're talking about an old Andrea Pirlo, you're obviously talking about Milan maybe 10 years ago. We're talking about Milan maybe 15 years ago. We knocked your blocks off in Athens. That's the Milan we're talking about.
Knocked our blocks off.
Best player in the world at the time in Kaká.
Dirk Kuyt put the blocks back up. He scored his goal.
Yeah, when it was too late. But you let Pippo Inzaghi score a double and got the job done in Athens.
Now, old man Inzaghi, exactly.
What I'm saying is that once Liverpool win more than a couple, one Champions League, you know, they win a couple more, then I'll start talking. Then we'll say, okay, then we can start making...
How many do we need to win four Champions Leagues in 5 years?
Well, we've done better.
We've made a final in one in 2 years. You guys made a final in one in 3 years.
You beat Tottenham in the final. Anyone can beat Tottenham in the final.
That's true. I can agree with that.
Why didn't anyone stop them getting to the final?
It's true.
I literally have no idea. The teams decided to tank for Zion.
I don't know how.
Right?
Yeah, tank for Zion.
Look, in all fairness, just taking off, you know, all our bias hats. At the end of the day, Liverpool have done a great job. But there is always going to be a new contender that comes out. I honestly think the next team to contend for Liverpool is going to be Chelsea.
It has to be, because
I can't see Pep Guardiola being at Man City for much longer.
Juventus, maybe.
If they win the Champions League this year, then yeah, definitely. I think he's probably got only one or two more seasons at most, because that's sort of what he tends to do. He conquers everything, although he never did win the Champions League with Bayern. And then he sort of moves on. In all seriousness, Liverpool have been tremendous this season and fully deserved champions. But we are, I was talking about dynasties or whatever, there is still a lot to come. And there has to be, there's still... the need for this team to prove themselves. If they're going to go and put the action on the pitch and win another couple Champions Leagues, win three leagues in a row, whatever, that's up for fate to decide going forward. There's definitely not going to be another 20-point gap. I'd be very careful of saying definitely in a footballing sentence, but I think very unlikely that the league is such a blowout for at least the next few years. And obviously Chelsea coming forward, I think Manchester United are on the brink. I think what they're starting to create there is certainly gathering momentum. Give them a few years, they'll be challenging again. And for Man City, it is an interesting one, because we've looked at them as the best team in the world for so long, for a few years, but really as that powerhouse. They've fallen short in the Champions League every year, and now they've been blown away in the league this season. I think they're going to come at a crossroads, because especially if this ban is put into place, who knows who's going to leave? Who knows who they're going to be able to attract? Coming in the transfer window. So I think it's going to be a big period for them. And that's what I think Liverpool will certainly go in as heavy favourites next season to win it again. give the likes of Chelsea a year to gel with Werner, Ziyech, whoever else, United with Bruno, see who teams sign. But like you said, we have to realise now that this is golden generation of Liverpool, and they are the best team in the world right now. And the players, we talk about best fullbacks in the world, best centre back, best goalkeeper, best front three, whoever. None of these guys are over the age of over the age of 28. There are a good 3-4 years at least for most of these players at the top level. Trent Alexander-Arnold is 21, and the man is just a wizard. He's going to be around for over 10 more years. And I think this is only the beginning from a perfectly non-biased point of view. Obviously, people watching the Zoom call, you probably think I'm a fool given my attire, if I'm saying perfectly unbiased. But
you look stunning.
Thank you, Ed. I agree. It's a special moment for Liverpool, for the city, for the club, for everyone involved. Only the beginning. And I think that's the important thing now. You can tell the attitude of Klopp, the club, and the players. They know that this isn't, it doesn't stop here. They want more. And just watching some interviews in the morning after the game, players are saying, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold was saying, I haven't won any of the domestic cups, so let's go for them. And players are saying, we go again. And it's that whole one game at a time mentality. And I think that's why Liverpool are going to continue to be a force in the next couple of years.
I think if we're looking at what goes at, first of all, Nick De Bono, I'll just point you in the direction of my, the beautiful man sitting behind me as the best goalkeeper in the world. But I think if we're looking at the way that Liverpool have been run over the last maybe 3 to 4 years, how it's been a rebuild, maybe a soft rebuild, but the way that they've brought in a philosophy and a culture to the club that has garnered success, it'll be interesting to see how they maybe reshape that culture and reshape that philosophy now that the expectations are so high. The fact we're even talking about a dynasty, the fact we're even talking about, the idea of like a three-peat or winning a couple of Champions League and those kind of things. If we were talking about that 3 or 4 years ago, we'd be laughed at. So I want to see how Liverpool approach the next couple of transfer windows. We have a situation now where, who's taking our best players? There's no club out there that I think appeals to Mane, Salah, Van Dijk. Why would these guys want to leave? There's no reason for them to leave because this is the best club in the world.
Can I just have a little point about what every team needs to do in any sport? When you get to the top, you need to keep improving.
One thing
they've got to remember is they need to keep buying players and keep improving areas, because some of these guys aren't getting any younger, guys like James Milner. They might look to try and move some guys on, bring some more young talent in, I think still Liverpool need to bring in one more midfielder. I think that's probably the position. If you're going to label the weakest spot in the team, it's still in the guts. I think they could probably still get one more, absolute bona fide superstar, because you've got Henderson, you've got Fabinho, you've got Wijnaldum, you've got Milner, Lallana. But Milner and Lallana, who knows how long they've got. Lallana probably gone at the end of the season.
He's going.
Catching up to him now. So you think they've got to start to, rejuvenate the list a little bit. Is Jordan Shaqiri part of this future? Is Joel Matip part of this future? Are they going to start to really bring some of these new young guys in, like Ryan Brewster, like Elliot, etc.? Now, if they do get Thiago Alcantara, then we're going to be talking about a very scary Liverpool team.
That would be good gas.
Will change everything. And that's going to be the transfer which could really set Liverpool apart. I still think they need a backup left back. I think Andy Robertson does need some support, whether it's a young left back just to develop for a few years and have the playing cup games and when Robertson needs a rest. I think they still need that. I think defensively, they probably need to get one more centre back. I think they could probably do a little bit with a bit better depth. I don't know what Dejan Lovren's future is. Don't know what Matip's future is. So they might look to get some new guys in. So I think that it's all about continuing to just, I guess, rejuvenate. Like, because you don't want to, get complacent. And the worst thing that can happen, we've seen this before with a lot of teams in sport, is that when they win one, there's the hangover. But I don't think that's going to happen with Liverpool. I think Liverpool's mentality and their attitude is to keep improving, not getting complacent. They're already talking, as you said, to win the capital, the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup. Like that goes to show people see them as just, you know, your Mickey Mouse competitions when you play the kids. You want, if they've got that attitude to win and then win a Champions League next year and win it again, the Premier League again, that for me speaks volumes to the Jurgen Klopp mentality and the winning mentality Liverpool have that we haven't seen in such a long time. And it's very rare you find that in a sporting team. And Liverpool could have something like the Golden State Warriors. There's no reason why they can't and be one of the great dynasties in the modern era in sport. That's one thing we've got to, in sport. There aren't many teams out there. You look at Juventus, you look at Golden State, as I said, you look at here locally, look at Hawthorn. That all have that winning mentality that they need to keep improving, and do everything they can to keep improving. And it's led by a great coach. And Jurgen Klopp is the best coach in the world for that reason.
Well, I think exactly. The way the position that the league is at and the position that world football is at, there is not a better time for Liverpool to go for that dynasty. You know, you even look at the ginormous clubs like Barcelona and Real Madrid. They're almost in a rebuilding stage themselves. And I think that Barcelona and Real Madrid, they need to rethink the way that they're operating their clubs, the players that they're bringing in. Barcelona have notoriously been terrible at signing players recently. Coutinho, ironically, was a bad signing. The fact, how much did we get from Nick Hughes? $700 billion or something crazy?
Yeah, something that, give or take.
Yeah, something like that.
£142 million, I think it was.
And then Dembele's been a bust. And then Madrid, it feels like they haven't signed anyone since Gareth Bale. So if Liverpool are going for these extra little Champions Leagues, throw it on top, or a couple Premier Leagues here or there, there's not a better time for it. Yeah. We talk about Chelsea. And that Chelsea team excites me so much. I am so excited to see them play next season. And I'm so excited to see the impending rivalry that it will bring. Liverpool are now in a position where they are the villains and they want to be...
The target's on their back now.
Exactly. If I'm a neutral fan and I'm rooting for someone, I'm rooting for Chelsea because they're the young guns. They're run by the old club legend and they're the ones on the rise. One day... Unfortunately, Hughes, we have to talk about one day Liverpool will be beaten. And I think if I was...
Watford, it'll be someone better than Watford.
Yeah, let's hope it's better than Watford. But I think if I'm looking from a neutral perspective, I am looking towards that Chelsea team as what will rival Liverpool going forward.
Yeah. Definitely you guys have, said it perfectly. The peril is now of complacency and not improving. But exactly like you said, Nick, when you're at the top, you have to stay there. And I said last year after the Champions League win, people look at Community Shield, Super Cup, Club World Cup as, you know, Mickey Mouse, glorified friendlies, whatever. But I said it's very important that Liverpool go and win those just to continue to tick over that winning mentality and breed that winning culture. We haven't had a cup run in ages domestically.
Yeah.
I think that's something that the club should really target going forward. Just picking up talking about leagues and dynasties and whatever. With this team now, there is no reason why Liverpool shouldn't win at least one trophy for the next 5 years. If that's just the Carabao Cup, so be it. But at least one trophy for the next 5 years has to be the target. And like you guys said, how long has it been? Well, 30 years since Liverpool were the hunters.
30 years.
Rather than the hunters.
Far out.
Yeah, so even now, not winning Champions Leagues. Same
exactly. That they didn't even make the top four in 2005 when they won the Champions League. So now that they're in this almost bizarre position of actually being good, and I think that's where some of our blind optimism maybe comes, because we've been so blindly pessimistic for so long that now I don't know how to act. Like, We just won the league. What the heck?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's imperative now that they continue to improve, continue to keep on winning, and just drive that forward.
I'm going to give two analogies just really quick before we have a look what's coming this weekend to sign off. You think about that weird position of being on top. It reminds me, if we think a bit more locally, about Richmond. You know, they won a premiership and everyone was like, oh my God, Richmond, won. They're a huge team, but they won a premiership. What's this? Like, what's this? Oh my God.
How did this happen?
That's another team that has that winning mentality, that they have such a great chemistry. And I always talk about the bonds between players, about how they're so tight knit, has great relationships with the coaches, etc. Now, Liverpool probably need to take a similar mentality of, all right, we've won one, we've got to keep going.
Let's all get neck tats. So
you don't want to end up being, you don't want to end up being similar. Like, you look at, you know, when you look at trophies, how teams have won them, you know, big teams that have won them in competitions, you think about around the world, you think about the Toronto Raptors in the NBA. They won one championship, but their big star left.
It was a bit random.
Not in a situation where it's like that, where their big stars are going to leave. Their stars are staying. This is the Golden State. This is the 2015 Golden State team right here. You just hate to have a 2016 scenario where you're up 3-1 and you completely capitulate.
That's right. We've got LeBron on our team in this situation, so it doesn't matter.
We've got everyone, mate. Literally everyone. name a player that – name a player, I think. I mean, obviously you can name players that would improve the Liverpool side. But – I don't think there are many players in this Liverpool team that you're actively looking to replace. Yeah. You know, I deliberately didn't mention the midfield because they are they're probably the most unimportant part of Liverpool's setup.
Exactly.
When you think about it. No, but they don't need to be that good, mate. We've got Jordan Henderson, and people are talking about Jordan Henderson being the PFA player of the year. Personally, from a Liverpool's perspective, I think is absurd. I don't think we can look at Jordan Henderson as the PFA player of the year. He's been great, but he's part of the most unimportant midfield to ever have existed, if we're looking at it. You know, the midfield doesn't have to be that good.
Looney of the Golden State Warriors.
No, but we don't have to be that good. It's the Golden State Warriors. They didn't need to have a good center. They had Iggy. They didn't. They don't. You don't need a good center when you've got.
Who is Liverpool's Iggy, actually?
Milner.
Yeah. Probably Milner or Jordan Henderson. He's just there. Like, he's fine, but you don't need him to be good.
Oh, goodness me.
You don't need him to be good. So,
guys, I think if we're running out of time, I think we should just park the bus just for a second. Because there actually is still 440
players. Park the bus.
Around the world. So, tomorrow night, there's only one game in the Premier League this weekend. Aston Villa take on Wolves. Aston Villa know that for them, points they need to get. Their only goal difference outside the relegation zone, while Wolves in the thick of it for a spot in Europe. Only 5 points behind Chelsea and six behind Leicester. So they're right in the hunt. FA Cup action this weekend kicks off on Sunday morning. Norwich versus Manchester United, Sheffield v Arsenal, Leicester, Chelsea, Newcastle, Man City. So some really intriguing ties there. For me, I want to see, if there's one thing I do want to see in the FA Cup this year, I'd love to see Sheffield go on a run and win it. That's
hell
just
yeah.
From the...
Especially given their league form coming out of the return, looking like they're going to fall and fall rather quickly. But their opponents, Arsenal, they surely have to be targeting this.
They won this morning.
Exactly, but they're some way off in the Premier League for sure, and they have to be targeting the FA Cup, which has been their competition for the last 10 years, but probably minus the last few when City seem to be dominating cup football, but Arsenal have to be targeting this as they're definitely their one and only chance for a trophy, and perhaps their one and only chance for a trophy for some time.
Europe as well, Nick. That's the one thing, you know, they might miss out.
Exactly.
I'd be okay with Man City winning the Champions League, honestly. I'd be fine with it. If it happens, it happens. You don't want to, Nick. You don't want to.
I'd rather Atalanta wins the Champions
League. Well, that would be good.
If we're talking about asterisks, just to have a sidetrack here, if we're putting an asterisk on the Premier League, then what on earth is going on the Champions League? If we're taking away the power of away goals and home crowds and putting them in hubs in Portugal, and you're not telling me that there's 80,000 asterisks on that, then I don't know what you're talking about.
I think it's more an asterisk with a tiny Champions League up the top of the asterisk. Champions League is now the asterisk of the asterisk.
Exactly. It's the asterisk cup.
Champions League design asterisk.
Tell you what, Nick Hughes, I'll put this to you. If we're having a look at the Premier League table, I'm not sure if you've got it in front of you or not.
I can have it in front of me, yes.
Who now that you know we don't have to support Liverpool, we've got our win and we can turn our focus elsewhere. Who do you want to stay up? Who are we rooting for now?
Stay up.
Yeah. Have a look at the relegation battle.
Yeah, I'd love for Villa to stay up.
Me too.
For the league as a whole. As well as for them. Yeah, and they're a great club with a lot of history and they've played some decent football. Out of them I'd like them to stay up. I reckon Bournemouth and West Ham are in some deep.
Can we all agree that we'd love trouble. To see West Ham get relegated?
It'd be so funny. God, it'd be so funny. I think it would benefit the league, honestly, because all those, you know, decent Premier League players from West Ham can now spread themselves across the league and not just be locked away at Olympic Stadium. You know, imagine it. Imagine all the West Ham players just kind of
imagine Championship at Olympic Stadium.
They're beautiful. They're beautiful toys locked in a very crap cupboard.
Like, I would say that's correct.
They are beautiful toys. Yeah, in a real. I agree with you actually, Nick. I want to see Villa stay up. I don't want to see him come up and go straight back down. But for me, because being in support of a Championship team, I want to verse West Ham next year. As I said to Athos that many times, we're going to be playing each other next year.
Yeah.
Gogglebox 2.0, Wigan versus West Ham. Make it happen.
The one meeting that we've had where Wigan's played West Ham since Athos and I have been friends, we were in League One, now we're in the Premier League, and we beat them in the FA Cup. So well,
that makes sense. Better club wins, mate.
Exactly. That's just a quick side note before we move on from English football. In the last 10 games, my boys have been the best team in the championship.
They're looking good to stay up.
3 points out of the drop zone now. Beat Huddersfield on the weekend. They got Blackburn tomorrow. Really excited for that one.
Can we go even further down to League One and talk about Coventry, who have made their way up into the championship?
Oh, Coventry!
If you guys went to Coventry, you'd understand how big of a deal that is. It's not great, but it's my not great team. So yeah, the boys.
Just let's move on.
Speaking of League One as well, the playoffs in League One are kicking off this weekend. So we've
Sunderland got in the playoffs, or they miss out?
Nah, they missed out on the points per game. Poor Meth Van is sitting in his office in despair. But we've got Pompey and Oxford and Fleetwood Town and Wickham in the semis, and the League Two playoff final. Between Exeter and Northampton is also this weekend. So our first taste of Wembley since coming out of lockdown, since the League Cup final. So some big action in lower leagues in England.
Let's quickly just talk about the other big three leagues around Europe. Bundesliga wraps up this weekend. It kicked off first since lockdown, but they finish up. The title race is done there as well. Bayern and Dortmund have locked in spots inside the Champions League. Leipzig are just about there. But that final spot between Mönchengladbach and Leverkusen will be decided, with Mönchengladbach hosting Hertha Berlin, a very dangerous game for them, whilst Leverkusen host Mainz. Down the bottom, Dusseldorf and Werder Bremen will fight for a playoff spot to at least stay alive. Werder Bremen at the moment are going down. They take on FC Cologne, whilst, where are my boys, Dusseldorf?
Union Berlin.
They take on Union Berlin. So very winnable games for both teams, but really interesting to see what happens there. And it should be a very intriguing end to the Bundesliga. All those games tomorrow night at 11:30 p.m. A bumper.
For the uninitiated Nick Dubano, which may or may not be me, can you explain to the audience and me as to how the Bundesliga 2 and Bundesliga playoffs work?
So third last in the Bundesliga and third in the second division, the two Bundesliga, they play in a playoff, a two-legged playoff to decide who goes up or who stays down. It is literally like a winner-takes-all situation. And at the moment, it is set to be Dusseldorf versus Heidenheim in the playoff. But Hamburg is still a chance, a big side in Germany, Hamburg. They were relegated, I believe, a season or two ago now. They are still a chance to get in. They need to win their game and Heidenheim need to lose, and they will be playing in that playoff. So really excited to see what happens there. in La Liga.
They really are the Hamburg, the Aston Villa of German football.
They really are.
We'd love to see them get back up.
Just because it makes, I think it's just because we're used to seeing the logo there. Yeah.
Yes.
Like the Heidenheim logo, I don't even know what that is. It's got FCH. It doesn't make sense.
Just a quick one, guys. La Liga this weekend, that title race is really heated up because Real Madrid are now top of the league, jumping Barcelona last week. This weekend, it continues. Barca taking on Celta Vigo and Real Madrid against the struggling Espanyol. The big game of the weekend, though, is Villarreal versus Valencia. Both those teams looking to make a late run for fourth, but I believe Sevilla and Atletico are looking quite good to lock up those final two spots in La Liga as we close in towards the last seven games there. Over in Italy, the title race there is looking pretty meek now after what happened yesterday with Atalanta defeating Lazio and Inter drawing with Sassuolo, meaning that Juve now 4 points clear. Must remember there is still 11 games to go. Juventus host Lecce tomorrow. Lazio, they play on, I believe they're actually in action on Sunday against Fiorentina. A very big game there while Inter play Parma. But the pick of the games is Milan versus Roma at the San Siro on Monday morning. Milan with a win against Lecce in their last game, whilst Roma as well putting together some okay form, defeating Sampdoria on the weekend. Oh, no, Sampdoria with the defeat. Our good friend Vitor won't be too happy about that one. But very exciting race there for the final few spots. And Atalanta, mamma mia, oh my God, 2-0 down against Lazio. And in a blink of an eye, we're up 3-2 and came away with the win, proving they are probably, along with Liverpool, the two most exciting teams in the world right now.
Terrific side.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we've gone way over time. We started a bit late as well because we were trying to get in touch with Josh for a while and we were talking a lot of basketball too. And we sort of got a bit sidetracked by time. But it's time for us to say goodbye on this Friday. Yes, Liverpool are champions of England, if you haven't heard already.
It's the wrong scarf, but oh well.
And New Zealand will be hosting the Women's World Cup. Yahoo! Ha ha! So what a time it is to be a football fan here in Australia, but not if you're a Manchester United fan, a Man City fan, an Everton fan especially. Seeing
any other fan, I would say.
Well, yeah, I'll sleep fine tonight knowing Liverpool are champions. It's not going to worry me too much, but that's a story for another day. Guys, it's time for us to say goodbye here on At Home with FNR. The boys will be back on Monday reviewing all the action over the weekend, plenty to keep your eye on. But for myself, Nick Devano, Nick Hughes and Ed Gooden, it is goodbye.
I'm on the Reds.
You're listening to At Home with FNR.